It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. With your own personal guide, the Pilgrim, on the 405, Mr. Will Crist.
So, welcome to Pilgrim Talks on this wonderful, just a magnificent day here in Laguna Beach. Lots of times as I'm moving around the world, not ever very far from the 405, at least spiritually, mentally, got that connection there emotionally, I come up with introductions and meetings with wonderful people who have made a significant impact in a variety of places in the world. And one of those we're going to have on the show today, and we're going to be talking a little bit with a fellow who has worked with business professionals around the world, done some marvelous things with them in terms of helping them become more authentic, more in touch with them, with themselves, and helps people get the obstacles, the blocks out of the way that keep them from being the wonderful, successful, marvelous people that we are all called to be. So from New York City, where it is probably a little cooler than it is in Laguna Beach and a little darker, I want to bring Anthony Vincent Bova on the show and let him tell us about Bova Communications. Welcome, Anthony.
Well, thanks for having me on the line. Appreciate it.
Yes, it's been several years that we've talked together at various times and worked together. And
yes.
So tell us a little bit about what the Bova Communication System is.
Well, the Bova Communication System is based on a very specific acting system, actually, that trains the actor really how not to act, trains the actor how not to do, how not to overcompensate, but how to be. And it's a very organic and systemic approach. And I've been, and my mentor is actually there in Hollywood, one of the biggest Hollywood coaches on one of the biggest coaches on the planet, and clearly and surely one of the biggest Hollywood coaches. His name is Eric Morris, and he's my mentor, and I've been under his tutelage for 25 years.
Well, do you still work with him?
Absolutely.
Oh.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I just spoke to him a few days ago, and I think we're due for another talk in a few days. I produce his New York workshops, so. And I'm hoping to. I got to pull his leg because he's a very busy man. But I'm hoping to get him to come to New York in 2012. So we've been talking, and you have to excuse. I got a little cough here, so I might, you know, if that happens once or twice, my apologies.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about how you work with, you know, what is it that business professionals, what gets in their way of being the best they can possibly be?
Well, it's a loaded question, but what it comes down to is, it really all comes down to is after you have a level of mastery on your topic, right, then it comes down to something else. Does the executive believe they're enough? If they don't believe they're enough, they're going to overcompensate. They're going to start imposing behavior. They're going to start to push, as they say. They're going to start to be laborsome, perhaps, in some way. They're not going to be organic. They're not going to be, authentic, relaxed. And their listening skills go down. And the listening skills are huge, man. They're really, really big. Because once the listening skills go down, it doesn't matter how authentic you are. It's because you're not there for your client. You're not there for your prospect. You're not going to do your job.
Well, now, that whole idea of having enough. Now, when you said that, I immediately flashed back to one of my... she's a spiritual advisor, and she said, I want you to go home, I want you to write, get out a big black mark and put on a card enough and stick that to your bathroom wall. Mm. What is it about us that causes us to think we don't have enough?
It's not we don't have enough, but we are not enough. Who and what I am in some way isn't going to be good enough. It's not going to be valid. It's not going to, in acting, it's one of the biggest dichotomies. It really is. because in the acting, in the art of acting anyway, because the actors come to show who and what they are, and so many times you're like, oh my God, I got to do more because it's, you know, I really got to impress them. I really got to, you know, do a great job. I got to be perfect. You know, that's where the perfectionist comes out and starts to run the show. And when all this happens, you and you don't have an eye on it, like I said, you end up backpedaling. And what I mean by backpedaling is you're not standing still, and you're not standing in your body. You're not listening, and you're starting to tug the conversation around in ways and hoping for you to get some approval. Now, what I do is that I'm not a generalist, I'm a specialist. And the specialist area that I am is that I train the client how to identify and eliminate these obstacles. And number one is awareness. But after the awareness, okay, so you're aware. That's all fine and good. But the important part after awareness is to then have a subset of tools you can use to eliminate these obstacles. Once you eliminate these obstacles, then you can be, capital B. Our whole work is predicated on being, not doing. And there's a very big difference between being and doing. When you're being present and receptive in the moment. You're listening in the moment. You're not when you're not being, you're looking at your client or prospect, right? You're looking at your audience, and you're saying to yourself, "Oh my God, how do I close? How do I do this?" Right? You're racing in your head. You're not being present. Clearly, you're not listening. And when you communicate clearly, you're not going to be communicating authentically. You're going to be pushing out something that you're hoping that they catch on to and that they like. It's the best communicators that I've come across, and at least in my opinion, or let me say it another way, every now and then, doesn't happen every day, but every now and then I'll get a call and they'll say, could you recommend a speaker? Because this is what I do, right? I deal with speakers all over the world. Do you know who I never recommend?
Who's that?
Professional speakers.
Why is that?
Because professional speakers, they're more invested in professionally speaking. I usually recommend advocates of the issue.
Uh-huh.
Because advocates of the issue, they care less in how they're being perceived, and they care more about the topic.
Oh, well, that's interesting to be a professional communicator versus communicating, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It's a very big difference. I see, and also the professional communicator that does the circuit, they're very, in quotes, polished. Notice I said in quotes.
Yeah.
Very polished. They've got their, you know, if you could count from here until the cows come home, and you're lucky if you get three in a 40-minute speech. You know? That's just how it is. They're very, very, very polished. But I'm not terribly impressed with a lot of them because they're too busy being polished and not busy and not enough energy on the topic at hand. But when you have someone who's an advocate about a topic, you'll look over a lot of ums. You really will. You'll look over a lot of huh. You'll look over pauses. You'll look over when they forget things. I mean, I've seen some great speakers just kind of stare at the audience and say, what was I up to? And someone would remind him, and he could pick up and go from there. Because he just, for whatever reason, forgot at that moment what he was up to. But because he might have spiraled out for a moment, but he was so invested in the topic that you really forgive all of that. And so much energy is, in my opinion, is put on being the polished speaker. And I don't trust polished.
Well, you know, that's interesting because in working with video, short video clips, it seems to me that people respond more to the jerky video that you get with a flip camera than they do with multiple cameras, professionally produced, very slick.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a loaded one. I don't know if it's because we could identify with it. I'm not sure exactly why, but I'll tell you this. when I see someone coming up and saying something, and you, there's a conviction in what they're saying, and like they have to be there, they have to tell you. And it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it's on YouTube, or you know, on LinkedIn, wherever they can get a video up. You know, it doesn't matter. But they have to tell you something. Usually, I want to hear it. Communications in 101. Public speaking 101. If you want your audience to be interested, you have to be interested, right? If you want your audience to be relaxed, you have to be relaxed. If you want your audience to be at the edge of their seat about what you have to say, really, you have to be at the edge of your seat of what you're saying. And, you know, just a mirror that goes on and on and on and on.
Well, all right, now, yeah. Anthony, we had you at the Sandler Conference a couple of times. You were there,
oh, yeah.
And you did some work. Now, talk a little bit about how this might help a salesperson. I mean, what would they need to believe about themselves to benefit from you?
First thing, I want to get an understanding of what they believe about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind me for a moment. What do they believe about themselves? How do they feel about being a salesperson? How do they feel? What's their values on that? Not what's their trained values, not what are they taught to believe, but what's inside? Is it a good feeling? Is it something that's healthy? Is it something that's gonna that they can rally around? Or is there a feeling, is there some of that going on underneath? That's because that's what people read. That's what you're communicating. You're not communicating text. You're communicating subtext, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I want to do is understand their relationship to themselves, their relationship to their work, how they feel about their product or service. And notice I said feel. Mm-hmm. And that's on purpose. And I'll get to that in a second. And then because if that's not in alignment, I don't care how polished you are, you're not going to convey your message with any kind of empowerment, any kind of conviction. You won't. So first I get that in alignment. And the main thing, though, is to understand what their business metric is related to communication. And many times someone doesn't know what their business metric is related to communication. And to define it. For example, a shareholder came to me and he said, Anthony, I'm too aloof. And as a result, my shareholders are not trusting me as much and they're starting to move. And I'm not holding them they're uneasy at the meeting. So what do I do is that, you know, we have to get them get this guy to be less aloof. That's his business metric, his communication metric, to be more approachable and not so aloof. So go back to your question about the Sandler at the Sandler convention. What can a salesperson first? I would understand what their business metric is. I would want to understand related to communication. I'd want to understand what their essence brand is. What is their essence that they're projecting? Is it one of neediness? Is it one of relaxed? Is it one of trust? And then what is it that they want it to be? And because we could achieve that. I don't deal with the text. I don't tell anyone what to say, but I deal with the essence because people sniff that out like dogs sniffing bombs. They sniff out the essence of people. And that's, to my book, what is the breaker... what breaks or makes a deal. It's all the soft stuff. So to answer your question, sorry if it's long, they have a lot to learn when I go. As a matter of fact, I did a lot of Sandler franchises around the country, and every time I worked with them, I had to deal with some of the typical issues that a lot of business people, not just salespeople, a lot of obstacles that they have, and that is what? They're too needy. They're too desperate. Not enough confidence. Low ego. I deal a lot with ego reconstruction. What else?
Well, one of the things that you were just saying, it seems to me that would fall right in line with when we talk to people, we say, I mean, in terms of training, we say, you know, we ask them, how important do you think words are? Oh, very, very important. Well, in reality, that's only 7% of that's, the communication, right?
Is it 7?
7%.
No, I thought it was a little higher than that. I didn't know it was 7.
No, the tonality is 38%, and the body language is 55.
No kidding. I should know those numbers. I don't know them. Well,
now, when we think about that, what you're talking about seems to me that that's going to be communicated in the tonality and also in the body language. The way isn't that a lot of what the kind of work you do?
Oh, totally. When someone is not comfortable in their skin, when someone is racing in their head, thinking what they're saying and they're not hearing you, what does their body look like? They have no substance. They take up very little, as they say, executive presence. It's another air quote I did on my end of the phone call here. Very little substance, and they're simply not still. They're just not. But so, wow, I didn't know it was 7.
7%.
Wow.
I'll send you a copy of the little pie chart we have that we hand out.
Yeah, I'd love to get that one because I'm going to use that on some of my clients. I didn't know it was that. All right. Well, thanks, Will. That's great information.
And now, so very often I'll get a phone call from somebody in the field, and they'll say, you know, I'm having trouble selling, and my sales manager says that I need some presentation training. Mm. I need some training in how to present my proposal better. That's not something that we do a whole lot of, because that's not really where the sale happens. The sale happens, is it?
Mm-mm.
That sale happens way at the front in the first 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, you know, and that's a loaded statement too. You know, there's so many things that come to my head when you said that. What comes to your head when you hear someone? Well, you know what they're talking about, right? When they say that. When they say I need to do a better sales presentation.
Well, what I hear from that is I'm really not using a system that's very effective in terms of selling, and I'm trying to use the presentation to close a deal, and the presentation never closes a deal. The presentation can only confirm what the buyer has already concluded in their own head long time before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not presentation that we need better. It's a presence that I need to improve, and it's also a system that I need so that I know what to do.
I'm curious because I'll tell you what happens with me. But just tell me, what do you do when that happens? Where do you go with the client or prospect at that point?
If they ask me about presentation,
yeah.
Oh, I ask them for permission to ask them questions, and I ask them a lot of questions about what's going on, what causes them to think that this is what they need. Because for me, the Sandler rule is the problem that the client brings you or the prospect brings you is not the real problem ever. And mm-hmm. So it's 2 or 3 levels down what the real problem is. And I think eventually we get to that place that you were talking about. I want, and I don't know how to get.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's why the presentation is so bad.
Yeah. Well, every now and then that'll come to me, and it's funny because that comes to me moment one or the first meeting. I nod yes, and I end up throwing it right out the window.
Uh-huh.
And I end up saying, okay, now let's forget about the presentation. Let's deal with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if we just deal with you, that presentation will really come, will be fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Let's deal with you. Let's deal with how you're functioning, where you're not, how you're not functioning, how you're getting in the way of yourself. Let's just deal with you. The other thing that pops into my head as you said that is people think communications is something you do. And that's wrong. Communication is an experience to be had. And it's that they're very different. When you think of it in terms of it's an experience. experience to be had. Now you can say, okay, how do I want this experience to be? I want this to be an experience in which I feel good about my prospects, my clients, in which there's a trusting environment in which I could ask them questions, you know, whatever that is that I set up for myself. And once you look at communications as an, because really think about it, it is an experience, right? You either feel good or bad about it afterwards.
Well, I think what you talked about setting up, I think there's a time, there are times when people set up, set themselves up by saying, it's not that I want to be, it's I want them to do something. And they may not want to do it, so how do I get them to do something?
Yeah. I can't help but chuckle at that one, because I never give them the right answer for that.
Well, listen, Anthony, can you stick around a little bit after the break? We'll get back and talk some more?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we're going to go and listen to a word from our sponsors, and they'll be right back with Anthony Vincent Boba, creator of the Boba Communication System, live from Times Square in New York.
Hello, this is Bob Anoni with Sandler Training, here to talk to you about rule number one. You have to learn to fail to win. Think about learning how to walk or riding a bike. When you first started to learn how to walk, of course you fell. And you fell again, you fell again, but eventually you mastered the art of walking. Same thing with riding a bike or driving a car or making cold calls or starting up a business. Henry Ford failed four times before he succeeded. Thomas Edison worked almost 10 years on the light bulb before he succeeded. They weren't failures, but they were willing to risk failure to find out what they were truly capable of achieving. At Sandler, we ask you to learn from your failures and understand that the process is failing, not you as a person. You are not a failure. The process that you are using isn't apparently the right one to produce the results that you're trying to produce. So if the cold call isn't going well, we'd ask you to examine the sales process that you're using. Don't get discouraged if your sales call doesn't go well. Learn from it. So again, Sandler rule number one is you have to be willing to fail and risk failure in order to win, to find out what you're truly capable of achieving.
Well, so welcome back. We have been talking with Anthony Vincent Boba, one of the proteges of Eric Morris, here, a great acting coach here in Hollywood. And Anthony does a lot of work for Eric and produces some of Eric's training out in Times Square. I've been in Eric's studio, a wonderful place, busy place, lots of fun to be in New York City. So, Anthony, tell us a little bit about what is it that business professionals, why do they come and what do they get? What do they wind up with? How do they become better?
Okay. They come to me many times thinking, because they know I'm this, you know, this acting coach for many years, they come to me thinking and hoping that they're going to learn how to act. And once they come to me, they realize after we start working is that they've been acting more in their life and in their work than they ever knew. And then what I do is that I work on getting them how not to act. Now, that's a scary thing. Very, very, very scary sometimes. Because why? Because now if I'm not going to hide behind this role, this other thing, this persona I just put on, this behavior I impose, then oh my God, then what are they going to see? Then what are they going to see? fact be told, the truth is that though, where you're extremely unique, where you have everything to offer, and where no one is the same as you, is in that spot. So, question again, Will?
What is it that business professionals, now you're not working with beginning salespeople, you're working with senior executives of significant corporations.
Absolutely.
What are they looking for when they come, and what do they wind up with afterward?
All right. What they're looking for usually, what they're looking for is not what they get for the most part. What they're looking for is to learn how to act. What they end up getting is a very solid tool set, a communication tools to access different parts of themselves. Based on when they need it. Parts of themselves that, just like an actor would do, really, what does a really good actor do? They know how to get in touch with different realities, not different roles, like in some way they're divorced from you, but different parts of you. So what they end up leaving with is an incredible communication toolkit, a very high level of emotional intelligence, which is really needed, higher listening skills, but at the end of the day, they're just so much more confident and comfortable in their skin.
And what does that do for them?
It allows them to relax. It allows them to actually care about the prospect, care about their product, care about their message, not about what they're advocating, if they're advocating on something, as opposed to how they're being perceived.
Ah, so they can focus more on the needs of the prospect rather than their own needs.
Here, I want to give an example. This is, a good one. I said this for the first time, it was around a week ago, and it stuck with me. I'm like, wow, I don't know where that came from. I'm not a surgeon, and you're not either, right?
Nope.
But imagine we were, okay? Imagine you were a surgeon, and imagine that you have someone that needs heart surgery, and you're going into the room where the operation is, and you have just one sharp kitchen knife that was used to cut fish, week-old fish, and a couple of scissors, and maybe a plier, and you're staring at this guy that needs heart surgery, and these are your tools. I imagine if you have a subset of tools like that and you're staring at someone who needs heart surgery, you're probably thinking, if I go near him, I am going to kill him with these tools. He's going to die. I can't do, hear where I'm going. I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm going to kill this guy. Clear the deck. Same situation. You have state-of-the-art tools, state-of-the-art staff, state-of-the-art hospital, there's a better chance that you can go and actually look at the person that needs heart surgery and look at that person and deal with that person and deal with that person's needs moment to moment based on all the things that happens in heart surgery, from blood pressure on down to, you know, to every part of the surgery. But the fact is, you could be selflessly involved in the patient and not be stuck in, I can't do this because I'm going to mess this, I'm going to kill him, as opposed to being stuck. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because rather than having to look at the vehicle for bringing the solution, you can look at the person who needs the solution.
There you go. That's what clients walk out with when they have had training, and the training has had some sticking power. That's what they leave with, the ability to not deal with themselves, so they can deal with their clients and prospects, or communicate internally, whether it's an issue in the office.
Uh-huh. All right, so what you're doing is removing those obstacles, which are really part of the personality, right?
Totally.
Uh-huh.
And they're built in from birth, some of them. Example. So-and-so is brought up to be seen and not heard. Well, so that let's call this person John. John is to be seen, and he looks good. He's a smart guy, but you only want to hear what he has to say as it relates to being on the team, never making any waves, ruffling any feathers, and smart guy. Well, what happens is that sometimes that John gets promoted because he's doing a good job in something, and he gets promoted into a manager role or in some authority role. Well, his training is to have absolutely no confrontation. His training is to avoid it at all costs. This is a life issue. This isn't a work issue. It's a life issue. Now, you say, Anthony, this is therapy, and, I'm not a therapist, but I'm an expert on the human behavior as it relates to expression. And on an expression level, this is a life issue. It's not a work issue. It just magnifies itself at work. You see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just shows itself tenfold at work because the stakes seem to sometimes are higher, or people are staring right at you in the boardroom. And so, boom, it's like a camera in your face, and it's bigger. But these are life issues. And so what I work on people, that's why I said, knocking the presentation out, deal with the life stuff, mm-hmm. with the life issue, because if that guy, that John, as we've coined him, if he is okay with some conflict and was trained to say what his values are, when it's time to get that promotion because he might be really smart in a specific area, then he'll own that. He'll own that. So I can't tell you how many times every now and then scientists will come to me and they'll say, Anthony, I have to go to court as a specialty witness. And I'm like, all right. And I have to really let them know about what the facts are. And I said, well, how do you, what are your thoughts about the facts in these areas? And they're clearly intelligent and smart, but you know what the funny part of it is?
What's that?
They became scientists as a way to avoid interpersonal life. And now they're on the stand. With cameras and reporters and lawyers trying to invalidate every second of their life. So many times the reason why people are in a profession is to kind of, it made them comfortable, and it was a way to duck some of their blind spots or weaker links growing up. So when they come to me, they got to get their strength a little stronger.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes we have these edges to our world, and the work that we're doing requires us to get beyond those edges, but that's what failure is, isn't it? We're not able to get beyond those edges.
Yeah, say that again. Could you, what's your take on failure?
Well, to me, failure is not being able to accomplish what I want to accomplish, what I believe I can, but there's some obstacle there that I might be unconscious to, I might be unaware of, but there's something in the dark that I can't get beyond. And I don't even recognize it as a wall.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, there's a couple of different definitions. I have some values of, I'm with you on some of those values. I also like to think of it as something I don't learn from.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And when don't I learn from it? Well, I'm too darn stubborn, if I could acknowledge I'm doing something wrong, but I'm too stubborn to change my game,
mm-hmm.
right? That's failure, mm-hmm. right? That's mm-hmm. insanity, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it insanity?
Well, if you're, the insanity that we talk about insanity is continuing to do the same thing and expecting different results.
Right.
So it's sort of like hoping that it'll get better, but I'm not doing anything different.
Yes, yes. When I think of failure, I usually think of the not learning from the mistakes. But let's think about that for a moment. That's a blanket statement. But when you really think about it, it's usually not having the awareness to really see clearly the mistakes. So when you say, what do executives walk out with? Major awareness in that area. Major awareness, because you're gonna fail. We're gonna fail into our grave, right? I mean, we're gonna make mistakes and we're gonna fall short and this and that. But the more we could be aware of our blind spots, because let's face it, you know, Will, I'm terribly sorry. Let's face it, you know, I'm a strong proponent and believer that your weakest link will always exploit you.
Well, that's the one place that you're not going to even know that's there, right?
Yeah, and it always comes back as, son of a gun, you know, like, whatever that weak link is, whether it's, it could go so many areas, and that's, I think, professionally, personally, and your weakest link always seems to show its face, and the more we can heighten our awareness to these weak links, then from being blind, now at least there's an awareness. And once there's an awareness, then we can work on them. But you can't work. I don't think you could work on something if you're not even aware of it.
Well, it doesn't have to be a failure for somebody to get a lot of help from you, does it? It could be, I'm just not getting beyond this limitation. I'm not getting to the place I want to get to. I'm successful in terms of money or position or power, but I'm not achieving what I believe I can.
Well, Will, let me say it another way. People who've really failed can't afford you or I.
Oh, well, that's true. That's certainly
true. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, people that come to us, by definition, are not failures.
That's true. That's true. Well, let's talk about what it would be like if we had you out here for some training for people. What would that be like, Anthony?
A lot of fun.
Okay.
I'm going to ask the big question that comes to mind. How's the food?
you've been in Hollywood. You know we don't have any good food out here.
That's my mom taught me that. I'd be on major film sets, and she'd say, and like, you know, Mom, you know, I'm on this film set, and like, you know, the big star, and I got this bit role, and she'd say, and how's the catering? You know. Anyway, coming out there, I tell you what it would be, and how it normally is when I do my training. We have a group of people, a dozen or so. We've got to get clear on what their communication metric would be. I want to know, I really need to know, if they communicated better, how would it be a value added to their business? How would it show itself? Would it be they would close more appointments? They would make simply, is it bottom line right there? Would they simply make more money? Like, could you quantify it? And then, what would that experience be like? What would that experience be like that's different than what they are right, than where they are now and when they communicate? Once we define that, I very simply help them find, create a roadmap to that experience. And that's where the essence branding comes in, because it's where I believe what people buy or don't buy or trust or don't trust is your essence. It's the essence of you. Instinctively, you back away from people or you gravitate towards them, right? What is that instinct that makes you go towards them, that essence? Once we define that, the rest of the time is going one person at a time and walking through that process, and it is highly systemic. It's And it takes an awful lot of intuitiveness and expert facilitation and blah, blah, blah. But there is a systemic approach. There's one step comes after another, and then that's where they end up. Mm-hmm. And then they learn that, and they go, oh, okay, wow, this is powerful. In other words, if I work in this way, I can have this experience on demand. I can have this experience when I want it. So, and this takes a little time. Sometimes it doesn't happen right on the first in the first session. Sometimes the awareness is brought on the first and on the second or third or so, and the reinforcement sessions they might come in. But breakthroughs happen immediately, and sometimes, you know, and sometimes it happens months down the line. I got an email from someone just last week, one of my clients I worked a year ago. And it was with one of those wow things because something finally hit them. So that's what we could expect. We could expect a group of people to get really enriched and clear and have an advantage they never had.
So if we brought you out here, then I could literally handpick 12 people that I wanted to help make better, couldn't I?
Absolutely.
And could invite them in to this work. Now, are we talking about half a day or a full day if we had 12 people?
12 is tight for a half a day.
Mm-hmm.
12, we could do 12. That's, we're capping out at 12 for a half a day. That looks a whole day. We'd be able to really spend more time. 12 and a half a day?
No, I mean 12 for a day. I mean,
a full day. Yeah, yeah, I could get into it. When I have that in a half a day, it turns into an ER room, you know, where I'm trying to stitch them up and throw it, you know, the next person's coming in. A full day, yes. See, what that gives us is really time with each person. And, you know, when someone's working, everyone is in their shoes. There's no such thing when you're in my workshop that something's going on there that's not related to you. You know, so it's a very exciting and educational process, and we document it. And so what I mean by that is that there's a document, you document the process, so you have something to refer to after the seminar's over, so it never leaves you in any way.
Excellent. Well, this is, you know, we'll have to talk about how we get you out here, and how we identify the 12 people who would find this, you know, who would welcome this kind of challenge and this kind of process and this kind of change.
Yeah, you want to throw in a, you mind if I put in a few words on that right now?
Go right ahead.
I could tell you some prospects that would be good for this and some that would not.
Okay.
Let me go to the would nots. The would nots are the ones that got all the answers, and they're pretty closed to any kind of new information. Every now and then, you know, I won't get that client, but they'll come to me because their boss or, you know, HR, someone brought them to me. And, you know, if someone is closed to information, then, interestingly enough, that's the person who needs the training the most. But if they're going to be closed to it, then there's nothing, you know, they're going to be closed. The ones that benefit the most are the ones that understand the importance of emotional intelligence as it relates to their work and their life. And the individuals who can appreciate the process of behavioral transformation. And because the process of behavioral transformation is by doing transformational exercises. You know, you can't get muscles by reading a book, right?
Well, what we say here is you can't teach a kid to ride a bike at a seminar.
And they got to be hungry.
If they're
like, hey, you know, I'm communicating okay, it's fine, you know, people like me, that's not a good client. I need, you know, the clients who are really hungry and where communication really a bottom line is dependent on effective communication.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people who are hungry to work and who get a lot out of my what I have to offer.
Okay, all right. Well, let's see if we can identify those people and invite them into an experience with you.
Well, it'd be wonderful to come.
It'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be great. I haven't been in the West Coast in about a decade. I'd love to come.
Oh my goodness! Well, we'll have to get you out here.
All righty.
Well, now, if someone wanted to get in touch with you, what would they do?
Well, my website under construction, please excuse some of it right now, is avbova, as in Anthony Vincent Bova, avbova.com, and my Twitter is at avbova. That's the Twitter account. And those are the two ways to get a hold of me, avbova.com.
Excellent. Okay. Good. Well, listen, this has been wonderful. I'm glad to, and I can hear the sirens in the back in Times Square, right?
I'm right in Times Square. I'm right here, and I put the curtains down thinking that was going to keep siren sound out.
Well, that's good. That's good. We know that it's real.
It sure is.
All right. Well, listen, I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to talk with you, and let's get you out here.
All righty. Thank you, Will. It's a pleasure speaking.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
All righty.
Well, there we have it. So I'm going to be talking to fellow pilgrims, people who've been on this show before, and I think there's some people out there who would find some great value in working directly with somebody as powerful and dynamic as Anthony Vincent Bova. I think that could be a wonderful thing for a group of people, a small, select group of people, who wanted to work on their communication and by communication wanted to get those obstacles out of the way that keep them from being authentic, from being at peace, at home in their body, and at home with their experiences, and really open up that channel of communication that sometimes we have such great difficulty with. After spending all the time on words and then maybe working on our tonality as if this were an act, we still get in the way of ourselves. And frequently what David Sandler said is, if your toe hurts, maybe you're standing on your own foot. So maybe we can get Anthony out here and get maybe 12 people around to take a look at where our feet are and find out if that's what's causing our toe to hurt. So there you have it. That's another little exploration with the Pilgrim on the 405. I look forward to more experiences like this. Look forward to talking with you again next week. If you want to hear more, all of our interviews have been archived at octalkradio.net or pilgrimonthe405.podbean.com, or you can also get them on iTunes and the Pilgrim on the 405 as a podcast. But look forward to talking with you again next week. Make it a great day.
You've been listening to the only show that takes you out past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. It's The Pilgrim on the 405, only on octalkradio.net.